ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, damn, Tom Izzo got people mad. Damn, LeVar Ball got. And damn, I watched that crazy HBO documentary about old girl running that hustle with the blood. But first, damn, Michael Avenatti out here wilding. Don't worry, guys. We're sticking to sports. I understand. You know, Avenatti, he the dude that represented, Stormy Daniels, the woman who appeared in some pornographic films who may or may not have had a relationship with the president of the United States. I ain't talking about politics with you, baby. I'm just trying to make sure you know who it is that we talking about here. And see, what that had helped Avenatti do was Avenatti had like moved into that class of, like, they call them celebrity attorneys. But, Gabe, does he represent any celebrities?
Not currently.
Yeah, I guess Garagos is a celebrity attorney, right? Like he counts as a celebrity attorney. Avenatti is just kind of like, I mean, we need a male Gloria Allred of sorts. You know, like, look, come holler at me and I'm going to shake these people down and I'm going to get you your money. That seems to be the play that he's made. And Avenatti, remember, after that Stormy Daniels stuff, wasn't he talking about running for president?
Yeah, that was certainly something that was on the agenda.
Yeah, but like, the only thing about Avenatti, man, Avenatti must have made like some serious enemies, at various points in this game. Cause wasn't there like a domestic violence allegation against him that surfaced and then like one of his ex-wives came out and said that he had never hit her or something like, but I don't remember anything coming of that, do you?
No, I mean, it's kind of screams of one of those instances where you have somebody who wasn't in the public eye. And now all of a sudden they're thrusting themselves into the public eye. So then, therefore, they're getting the scrutiny of a public figure.
Well, not just, this isn't to me the scrutiny of the public figure. This is the scrutiny of taking aim at, for purposes of this discussion, the king.
Oh, 100%.
You know what I mean? Like, there was one of the indictments, the allegation, I don't even know what the technical term is. Anyway, they claim he ran a wire fraud hustle where basically he took money from a client and then began to spend it. Like, before delivering the legal services. Like, that's the thing people forget. You realize this, right? That there were two things that came down about Avenatti yesterday. It was that and, oh, the other one, where apparently he tried to shake down Nike for $25 million. Yeah. See, what I imagine happens for a cat, in a situation like this with Avenatti is that, hey, man, like, if you need a lawyer to try to do something big, regular people don't, like, they don't have anybody to call and be like, look, I need a very, very good attorney for this. No, regular people don't typically have access to those sorts of folks. So who are you going to call? You going to call the dude that you saw on the television, right? Maybe whoever the big man is, like, around your little city, right? Your little locale. Maybe you call that person. But, for example, and I know this is going to sound a little bit, you know, dark, but you get where I'm coming from. Hey, man, in 2019, if you feel that you or a family member has been mistreated by the police, what are the odds that they're going to call that dude Crump from Florida? He the dude right now in that moment. For a point, like, Johnny Cochran was that sort of dude. Johnny Cochran was the lawyer that you knew. Okay. Well, now, for Avenatti, after what happened with Stormy Daniels and Trump, like, there are a lot of people who looked up and saw that and they're like, yo, that's the man that I'm going to call. And apparently one of those people who had that eye was an AAU coach. Now, I don't know. This is DeAndre Ayton's AAU coach in L.A., ESPN. I saw on the website, I think Schlayball did the story, and he was saying that it was DeAndre Ayton's AAU coach that apparently is the guy that was working with Avenatti, or the guy who had retained Avenatti. And so my guess on how this plays out is all this stuff happened with Adidas and all of this. And now there are all these cats over here who've been doing this work for Nike who are like, ooh, I wonder when they're going to come over here and start looking at stuff. I'm very curious about that right there. And invariably, there's somebody out there that's like, yo, I can get paid. I've got all the information. I hold the cards. I can go get this bread. Or you get somebody who had a previous disagreement with Nike, and that might be the case here with Ayton's former coach, because apparently Nike cut off his AAU program. You get a guy like that, and he's like, yo, I'm going to call somebody. I'm going to make something happen. Who you going to call? You call Avenatti, man. Like, he's the guy that's in this business. Gabe, I have to say, though, I'd probably call Gloria Allred or Lisa Bloom, you know, because, I mean, basically, we see their work generally, like, in the same realm. Is that a good way to put it?
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Like, would they be willing to come over here and do this, or are they operating just on a matter of principle that they play their game on different causes? Anyway, Avenatti, so goes the story. And if you haven't heard this, you'll love this, okay? Avenatti is representing DeAndre Ayton's old AAU coach, who, again, as I just told you, got, like, cut off from Nike. The government alleges that Avenatti called up Nike on, I believe, the 19th of March. Let's move fast. He called them up, and he told them that, you know, he had this information and that he was going to have a press conference at the same time as Nike's earnings call. Yes, and his press conference was going to lay out all the receipts that he had on Nike if Nike did not write a check for $1.5 million to this AAU coach. And then on top of that, Nike was going to have to hire Avenatti to conduct an independent investigation of what it is that they had been over there doing. And in this investigation that came, there was a big retainer that was going to be deemed earned as soon as it was paid. And then he told them that the deal would be a minimum of $15 million in billable hours, but a maximum of $25 million in billable hours. And there was a co-conspirator involved who worked between Avenatti and Nike before they ultimately got on the call. And when they got on the call, Avenatti said all this and went on this long tirade and everything else. And the intermediary, by the way, was Mark Garagos. We'll get back to Garagos in this in just a second. But the intermediary was Mark Garagos. And apparently what Avenatti did not realize was when he called Nike, Nike then got off the phone and called the feds. And then the feds were all up in the conversation where Avenatti said he was going to shake them down. Right. So yesterday morning, Avenatti sends a tweet that said that he was going to have a press conference today. Today. He said he was going to have a press conference today. Today is the day this is being recorded. And that he was going to lay everything out. 45 minutes later, the feds were like, actually, we allege that Michael Avenatti is shaking down Nike. And here we are. Where is here? Here is, it is 10:48 Eastern time on Tuesday when we are doing this. I rode the train in. Before I rode the train in, Avenatti had tweeted about DeAndre Ayton and his mama taking money from Nike. Okay? But Gabe, that didn't seem like such a big deal. We already knew that, right?
Yes.
I mean, maybe not from Nike necessarily, but, you know, we up on game. Then I sit down in the chair, and Gabe is like, yeah, that stuff about Bol Bol. I'm like, oh, that's right. He's probably still tweeting. And he tweeted that Bol Bol plays at Oregon, my new Bol son, said Bol Bol and his handlers also receive large sums from Nike. The receipts are clear as day. A lot of people at Nike will have to account for their criminal conduct, starting with Carlton DeBose and moving higher up. The diversion charade they orchestrated against me will be exposed. Gabe, what in the hell is he over here doing?
Well, things are falling apart quickly over there for him, so he's trying to pull as many people as he can down with him.
Yo, what is the audacity that you must have to think that you're going to walk in here and shake Nike down? Like, did he really think that he had enough leverage to muscle $25 million from Nike? Was wild about this, man. I don't know if feel bad is the right way to put it, but I kind of feel bad for the AAU coach because I feel like Avenatti had just walked in there and been like, hey, give my man a mil and a half, give me a mil, and we'll go away. I feel like Nike would have paid that. Am I wrong? Like, does that not sound like something that if you're Nike, you would do?
Yeah, I mean, you don't know if, like, they as a business have, like, a policy of, like, not getting shook down like that for whatever.
Yeah. But I could see them doing it. That had a chance to be successful. These people go big, people offended. You think you about to strong arm $25 million out of this? And also where I am confused. Gabe, help me out here. What in the world was Mark Garagos doing getting in the middle of it? What purpose did he serve other than just getting his name in the paperwork?
Trying to get a little shine. That's what he's trying to do.
But he couldn't get shine. It was a shakedown. Also, is he snitching? Because he's listed as a co-conspirator, but he is not charged, even though he seems to be involved in this right here. Let me tell you something funny about Garagos too. It is interesting seeing, depending on the news outlet, what Garagos' client list looks like. Like, I think the ESPN story had Michael Jackson, Chris Brown, Colin Kaepernick, and Jussie. The AP story I read had Michael Jackson, it had Jussie, had somebody else. It wasn't those people. But the problem that Garagos has is basically you're a defense attorney. So it's like you got a lot of people, like I don't want to say they guilty per se, but you know what I mean? Like you got a lot of people that people believe to be guilty when they put this down, right? Like right now, the last thing you need for people to be saying is you were Michael Jackson's lawyer. That ain't going over so well. You dig? This is what the AP has is his client list. Because again, they got a different crowd. Michael Jackson, Winona Ryder, Scott Peterson, and Jussie. Three people America thinks are guilty. And Winona Ryder. Was that when she was shoplifting?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Four people,
from my childhood there.
Yeah. Four people America thinks are guilty. By the way, two of whom won in court. But this is like, what are you doing? Why are you involved in this? How did this not seem like a bad idea? Does Michael Avenatti have something on you? Like, what in the world possessed any of them to do this? And Nike, I want to know the decision-making process that happens when you're being extorted and you decide, man, we just got to call the cops. Because I don't know what is or is not true of what Avenatti is saying. But if it is true, what are your reservations if you're Nike about calling the cops? Because I feel like if they wasn't investigating this, now they have to, right?
Yeah, and also, too, what's interesting about it is that with the NCAA and the trial that happened recently, that was all about Adidas.
Yes.
Nothing necessarily came out to my recollection about Nike.
Nope, did not.
Right? So if you're going to the feds on something like this, then that's assuming that you have nothing to hide, right?
This is amazing. This is amazing. Like, I don't know what this is ultimately going to be. I don't even know if this story is a big deal. It's just really funny right now. Let me see right now before I forget if Avenatti said anything else since we've been on here. Has the president talked about Avenatti yet?
I have not seen anything.
Hold on. Give me a second. Avenatti's not saying anything right now, so I'm going to see what it is that the president has to say, if the president has anything to say about it. Like, you'd have to take a victory lap if you Trump on that one, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, these are apolitical observations, by the way. Just so everybody knows, we just talking about what the world is. Oh, man, they must be keeping his phone from him. In the meantime, don't take Avenatti's phone away. I want to hear everything. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about your man Tom Izzo. But first, really, what do you love the most about shaving? Is it the closeness, how smooth your face is, the comfortable glide? Well, join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/Bomani. Harry's founders were tired of paying up for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. They knew a great shave doesn't come from gimmicks like vibrating heads, flex balls, or handles that look like spaceships, taxes that the leading brand has used to raise prices for decades. They fix that by combining a simple, clean design with quality, durable blades at a fair price. Harry's bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. They've received over 20,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot and Google. Harry's replacement charges are just $2 each. That's half the price of the Gillette Fusion Pro Shield. All Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Now get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. Weighted ergonomic handle, five-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lather shave gel, a travel blade cover. Listeners of my show can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/Bomani. Make sure you go to harrys.com/Bomani to redeem your offer and let them know I sent you to help support the show. Hey man, I don't even really want to talk about this for so long, but I am blown away by how America got so caught up in this story about that time that Tom Izzo lost his mind up in here, with his player on Thursday. Like, you're hearing this well after. And in fact, you might be hearing me talk about this on Thursday. I'm talking about the other Thursday. And so, Michigan State playing their first round game. Aaron Henry wasn't doing something. I still don't know what Aaron Henry was or wasn't doing. Tom Izzo went over there and started screaming at him and losing his mind and putting his finger in his face. And multiple people repeatedly were having to, like, people are his players, having to hold Izzo back and Izzo face turning colors and all this stuff. And then they sit down. He's supposed to be diagramming a play, but he can't because he just can't let it go. And he just keeps on going and everything else. And I have to be honest, I was not present on the internet for the early portion of the discussion. I don't know how hyperbolic people were being in chastising Tom Izzo, but there's no argument that anyone could make that Tom Izzo did not lose control in that moment. Now, I want to be clear that I don't think him losing control in that moment is the biggest deal in the world, but I think it's an undeniable fact that he lost control. He was not operating in that moment with some sense of purpose. He might have been operating with some macro level idea that what you do when people need to be quote unquote held accountable is that you go and you scream at them. But in that moment, he wasn't doing that because he was adhering to the larger plan. He was doing it because he lost it. And that's it. And me as a person, I don't have a lot of respect for grown-ups who lose it. I don't. And I understand high stakes situation and da 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 and everything else. Yeah, I get that. I also get that sports is not the quote unquote real world. You know, like the way that we interact in our offices here is not the way that a sports team is going to interact. Like, I'm fully aware of that. And I'm like generally okay with that as an idea. Like, I'm with you there. But on the flip side, and this is the part where I get annoyed with people who always put on their capes for the aggressive authority figures under these circumstances. Even if it is deemed appropriate in that world, I don't understand how you can so comfortably endorse behavior that in your life you would not tolerate. And I'm pretty sure that none of you would tolerate somebody putting a finger in your face and doing all that in the name of getting the best out of you. You wouldn't tolerate that. So even if you think it's appropriate in the sports world, I don't understand how you can passionately endorse something that you yourself would not allow. Like, there's a startling level of hypocrisy in that right there. So yeah, you can get and understand that a coach is probably going to scream at a player in a way that you would not be cool with yourself, right? You can say that maybe that doesn't offend you. That's fine. But why are you riding for it? Like, on what basis are you riding for it? And what makes it wild to me about the fact that people ride for it is I feel like most of the people who are out here riding for it outside of their homes, maybe don't exist in no situation that affords them a level of authority to scream at people, which means that in the dynamic that we described, they are more likely to be the person being screamed at. Yet they are riding for the screaming. Like, you got to admit, man, that's a little bit backwards. that's a little bit off. And what happens in this is it becomes very difficult to make what should be a very simple point and observation, which is Tom Izzo lost control and losing control isn't good. Like I do that and all of a sudden I got people out here calling me snowflake and all this other stuff. And I'm like, how are you denying the fact that he lost control? So you can ascribe all kinds of purpose and everything to what he does, but how can you ascribe purpose when he is in that moment behaving without purpose? And the problem with it is the fact that he is behaving without purpose. Look, man, sometimes people got to be harsh with you. Sometimes you're going to be in situations where people are going to need to raise their voices at you. And yes, sometimes you are going to need to be tough enough to look that person in the eye and take it. I'm on board with that as a general idea, assuming, of course, that you have earned that level of respect from me. And see, that's where the Izzo thing gets fun, because I do think that Izzo has earned that measure of respect from his guys in a lot of ways. And he is one of those coaches that's got it set up where you allow to holler back at him. Okay. You know, and I do acknowledge that's a little different than the people who demand full on fealty from the guys that they scream at. Yeah, that stuff is not the same. But yeah, I'm right there. I mean, I get that idea, but you also have to acknowledge, man, that's a slippery situation right there. Cause the whole idea is, he screams at me like that because he loves me. Where you heard that one before? Right. So yeah, you don't have to think that Tom Izzo is the worst dude in the world. You can acknowledge that Tom Izzo's players do love him. You can also say, yeah, I don't really feel like that's the way to go about it. I don't feel like that's how you needed to do it. I think that's okay. And I don't think that's a big monumental deal. But we're way days later, man, and every time I mention anything about it, or you say anything about it, man, people get so charged up about defending the snowflakes. And Scott Van Pelt, I love Scott, man. Scott had a thing where he talked about don't get offended by things that was basically don't be so offended by things that don't affect you. And I'm like, holy smoke, Scott, I got some other issues in this world where I need you to not take that attitude. Like, it would help me out a great deal if on some other things, you did not take that attitude. You do whatever it is that you want. I'm just telling you that, like, that approach, I could use your help with some things that don't affect you. Just so you know. Now, what I do think is happening, though, and I think the point that maybe largely that he was making there was that, one, the NCAA tournament attracts a lot of attention from people who don't ordinarily watch these things, right? So they are bringing a different worldview into the space. And so they're looking at things that we just kind of take as normal in many cases. And they're coming out there and they're appalled by it because they are not accustomed to this space. And so what people are ultimately saying, I think in a lot of ways, is this is how we do things over here. Don't bring how you do things over there into how we do things over here, which, again, something I understand. However, there is a real value in appreciating the perspective of people who are not so lost in the trees as we are. Like, sometimes you need somebody from the outside to be like, yo, man, that's ridiculous. That's what you need sometimes. And that's that. So anyway, I think it's perfectly appropriate for people to be like, I am not going to ride for behavior that I myself would not tolerate. I get where people come from. And I do think that maybe some of the things that people have said on that side are a bit misguided. I also think it's fair to ask the question whether or not, like, screaming at people in those ways is the best way to do it. I think it's also fair to ask whether there should be a different standard on, like, whether you should do this screaming when other people are around. Like, let me tell you, somebody who's known and been known for a long time for screaming at his players, Mike Krzyzewski. Gabe, when's the last time you saw a video of Mike Krzyzewski screaming at one of his guys during a game?
Not in recent memory. The only, like, things I can think of when you catch, like, him getting all red face and screaming are at the officials.
Yes. And even then, like, he keeps that low. Like, I think he does his scream. I mean, I also think Duke does a great job of making sure that it's not seen, right? But there's something to be said about not embarrassing people. There's something to be said for having that concern, like, not embarrassing people. Brad Stevens, by the way, is a guy who get on his players, but not in a way that ever embarrasses them. Like, you'll never see what it is. You know? So, yeah. I think there's room for being harsh with people. I think being harsh with people is sometimes necessary. I also think putting your finger in people's faces is too far. It is. And that ain't no snowflake thing. Let me tell you something, because if you a person that let people put their fingers in your face, I'd be damned if you call me the flake. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about the Big Baller brand. But first, guys, I know you've heard me tell you this before, but 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. It's a big problem. It's a problem I know a lot about, more than I care to admit. Anyway, the thing is, you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. It's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you've lost. Why sit back and watch your hairline go backward when you can turn to medicine and science? Well, there's a solution, and it's for Hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions, they'll help you keep your hair. It's no snake oil pills that are stuffed from the gas station, prescription solutions that are backed by science. No waiting room, no awkward in-person doctor visits. Save hours by going to forhims.com. Just answer a few questions and a doctor will review and can prescribe you products directly shipped to your door. Now order now. My listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today right now while supplies last. See website for full details. This will cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to forhims.com/Bomani. That's forhims.com/Bomani. forhims.com/Bomani. Okay, Gabe, I never asked you how you felt about the Big Baller brand.
You haven't in podcast past.
How did you feel about it in its inception?
Well, I was steadfastly against it from the beginning, given that not only am I a die easy Lakers fan, I also went to UCLA. So, because I went to UCLA, I had a early introduction to Lonzo and to LeVar, who was up to his same shenanigans at UCLA as he is with the Lakers. Criticizing coaches, criticizing athletic directors at the time, throwing players.
And the rest of y'all criticized that athletic director too.
Yeah, yeah, that's totally fair. Throwing other players under the bus, all that sort of stuff. I think I just always wanted like less of LeVar, wanted LeVar to go away. What's interesting about it to me is I felt like Lonzo was always a big Nike guy. Even back then, I was kind of surprised. Not that I was surprised he went to UCLA because he committed like super early, but UCLA was Adidas at the time, and then they've become Under Armour since, whatever. There always seems to be like a connection there. It's not surprising from LeVar's perspective, but from Lonzo's perspective, it's like, yo, you've got your own shoe, but I couldn't understand why when you're an athlete at the highest level, why you would want to put your body on the line in a product that is inferior.
See, I loved the idea. I loved the ambition. I didn't know it was like the best idea. And I think that there was a great potential for gain there. Like I felt like LeVar overestimated what he had in his kids, like how good they were at basketball and what it would take to like actually carry a brand. But I could never begrudge a man for trying to do his own, right? And the ambition behind it, I was with that. I didn't know how well it was going to work, right? And I think the things you talked about, like the actual engineering and quality of the shoe and stuff like that, I think that those were real concerns that should have been had there. And the value that comes just from like being on Nike and what Nike can do for your brand and all of that stuff. Okay, cool. Like I was there, but I couldn't knock them for trying to get their own thing cracking. And it was kind of heartbreaking to find out that they got. They got God. And what I'm confused about in this, you know, LeVar talk a lot of that. I'm from the hood type stuff, you know, when it comes to conversation. Not that he still lives there, nor does he like pretend to, but still, you know. Gabe, this dude was out of jail for like a few days before he met up with LeVar and instantly started cooking up a new con. Did LeVar not know he went to jail for this stuff?
Especially when they're supposed to be close.
That's my thing. And they went back with this dude for years. Like, I'll give credit to old buddy for this. He got his plan into action early. Like, I think they got the wheels in motion in this on like 2010, like the idea of the Big Baller brand. And look, they got the Facebook show going. Like, there was clearly enough in the on the front end to lead you to go all the way in on the con. I just don't understand how it was that dude thought he was going to take $1.5 million out and nobody was going to find it. Like, the one thing I do think we have to say about this Alan Foster character is he definitely seems to be a dedicated criminal, but given that he went to jail not once but twice, he seems to be a sloppy one. And the sloppiness seemed to catch him again, and he got caught again. And now LeVar, can LeVar ever come back out in front of us again? I really don't think he can. Like, if, like, for people who wanted less of LeVar Ball, this might be it. This might be the thing that makes it, because I can't imagine how embarrassed he is. And honestly, I can't imagine how guilty he feels. You know, like, if you're a person who, and I think this is something fair to say about him, this is a dude who seems to be very clearly and obviously protective of his sons. And that is the most important thing to him, is protecting his sons. You know, like, we, for all that talk we had and thought that we had about, like, LeVar was going to run this and, you know, all the money, Lonzo owns over 50% of the company. Like, all the money's going that way. All this stuff, man. And you linked your son up with the man who stole $1.5 million from him.
And the thing about it is, too, is, like, where is all that money coming from for the company? Right.
Right.
The whole company is built off of Lonzo. Like, the other two brothers, they're younger, and the middle brother wasn't any good.
Mm-mm.
So the whole premise of the brand is built on Lonzo. So do you think that Lonzo's just going to give you his paycheck and not ask any questions?
This dude took $1.5 million. And understand, Lonzo's deal with Big Baller Brand only paid him like $445,000 last year. It is comical, the difference in the endorsement money he's making versus his peers, because of this. Like, this was a bad break for him, and good for him, by the way, for being the one to stand up and be like, nope, this is gonna stop. Like, I'm out, I'm not doing this. Like, we wondered when the time was gonna come that Lonzo decided to be his own man about this, and you know when it happened? About at the time when it would, when he's about 21. You know, like, this is about that age where you start asserting yourself in those ways. He might have done it even if it wasn't a matter of getting him for that $1.5 million. But, like, to me, this is, like, ultimately a sad story. I know there's a lot of people that's going to want to dance on the grave of the brand and of LeVar and everything else. But I really think that he's got his problems. But I really think on this matter, he was a man that was operating with a measure of good intention. And who, by the way, had gotten his son a level of national visibility that is rare. Like, Lonzo Ball and, you know, by extension, I guess LeVar became a household name as much as anything else, but LeVar kind of became like Bundini Brown, you know? Or, like, they're actually better examples of Bundini Brown. But he's the guy that you don't like, and it helps make you like the other guy. That's what he was. That's what he did. And then he got. Damn, homie.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from transportation.
This is Fez Siddiqui, a technology reporter with the Washington Post. Lyft is laying out the challenges that not only the company faces, but that threaten the whole ride-hailing model in general. It's part of the IPO process, where a company goes public and lists its shares on the stock market. Lyft is soon to become the first of the Silicon Valley ride-hailing giants to do so. As part of that process, it has to be unusually candid about its operating position to avoid potential lawsuits from shareholders down the line, lest they fail to disclose a potential risk. So what are the challenges? Lyft isn't profitable and may never be, the company says. It lost nearly $1 billion last year. It relies on a yet unproven model, thousands of privately owned vehicles, drivers who are independent contractors rather than employees, and fares subsidized by investors that mask the actual cost of the ride. Regulations by cities cracking down on congestion could pose a problem. So could potential lawsuits, say, from drivers suing to be reclassified as employees. And then there are the big gambles. Lyft has poured millions into urban mobility investments, like bikes and scooters, that may not pan out, the company says. Meanwhile, it's betting on a driver revolution that may never come to bear. Lyft is banking on a world where fleets of robot cars shuttle passengers from destination to destination, eliminating the need to pay drivers. It's a reality that may never come true. Despite all this, Lyft is hoping to rake in a cool $2.1 billion in its initial investment round at $62 to $68 per share, with a valuation north of $20 billion. Not bad for a company with a yet unproven business model.
Are you surprised that Uber's letting them get to the market first?
I am surprised. I didn't know that Uber had not done it and that other ride-sharing companies had not done it. But it is interesting when a company does that, you know, that they've got to start sharing information, right?
Yeah, and I wonder, we'll talk about that later, but I wonder, like, so for Uber, when that day comes, if it goes bad for Lyft, how is Uber supposed to come around to the other end? Like, or do they have the advantage? Like, what is the advantage in seeing how it goes for Lyft, or is the advantage in Lyft being the first to have their IPO?
It seems like one of those things where it's kind of like a let's wait and see approach. But I did find it really interesting when Fez said that Lyft was not profitable. I did not know that.
Yeah, I don't think Uber's profitable, is it?
I don't know the particulars on that, but it's surprising to me at least.
Well, I know the thing you got to remember with Uber is the way that Uber is able to keep the fares where they are is as a result of all that, the infusion of capital. So basically the venture capital money is subsidizing the fares. And then once that money stops coming in like that, the fares will have to go up. But like when I was in Costa Rica riding Uber, I mean, those rides were like $1, $2. Like, I mean, you know, in Panama too, cheap in a way that is simply not sustainable. It made me wonder, my God, what in the world are you paying these drivers?
Yeah.
You know, but that's what it is right now. The cash is subsidizing these fares. And at some point, they're not going to be able to do that anymore. And that's when this is going to get to be real.
This next one comes from social media.
Hi, I'm Shannon Van Sant, and I'm a reporter for NPR. MySpace may have lost a decade's worth of music uploaded by users. The once dominant social media platform started in 2003 and quickly gained popularity as a platform for uploading and sharing music. It also helped new bands find audiences. But now the company says millions of music files uploaded to the site may have disappeared. MySpace reportedly posted a message on its site saying a server migration project resulted in the loss of photos, videos, and audio files uploaded more than 3 years ago. As many as 50 million tracks from 14 million artists may have been lost. Some users of the platform have reported trouble accessing their music over the past year. In 2006, MySpace was the most visited internet site in the U.S., and it helped launch the careers of music stars such as Lily Allen and Kate Nash. News Corporation bought the site in 2005 for $580 million, and at one point considered merging it with Yahoo. It eventually dropped those plans and sold MySpace for $35 million in 2011. Since then, MySpace has waned in popularity, but people have continued to use the site as a place to store music, photos, and other media.
Burn it. Burn it all. Burn it all. Get that bathwater out of here. We'll worry about the baby later. Because I imagine while there's a lot of great stuff that people put up on MySpace, whoo boy, people put up some trash that we do not need to immortalize.
I did not know that MySpace was still a thing.
I did not know they were still in the league in the capacity as described.
Still in the league is a good way to put it.
Yeah, I didn't know. Like, I had no idea that people were still, like, logging on to it. Like, wow, that... Like, what did somebody tell you? Where do you work? Oh, I work at MySpace. Look, I understand times are hard. If you don't have a job, that's fine. I'm not going to judge you for it. No, really. I work at MySpace. What do you do? I'm the CFO. Like, who knew? Who knew?
That was a huge thing for MySpace, though, was the music. So
yes.
I'd imagine for people who are, you know, are sentimental about that thing, or for people who used it and still have stuff on there and just as kind of like a way to store stuff, it's a sad thing. But if you're still storing stuff on a website of a company that has like gone under, maybe that's not the smartest thing.
Actually, an irony of this, though, is that the music was like the blessing and curse of MySpace. Because basically what happened to MySpace was Facebook was able to position itself as a more bourgeois alternative to MySpace. You ain't got to go all here, log on, and hear this loud song that starts off everything else. Like, MySpace was so distracting. Is that the best way to put it? It was so distracting. They stopped by the booth.
All right, so this last story is very short, so I didn't get a reporter to give us the information. I figured I would just do it. On Saturday, rap mogul Dr. Dre made a post about his daughter, Truly Young, who got into USC. This all kind of ties back to the college admissions scandal. You posted, my daughter got accepted into USC all on her own. No jail time. And so it's a little ironic, given that he has donated significant sums to USC and has a building named after him and Jimmy Iovine. Bo, your thoughts?
Yo, so I tweeted about this. I asked people to get mad at me. I asked people saying I was trying to take the black man down. It was all over the place. Now, I don't remember if I talked about it here, but the part of the college admissions scandal that was being lost is those people are small money, right? They are small money. Like, you got people in that scandal that was paying like $500,000 to try to get their kids into school. Dre and Jimmy Iovine made a gift to USC between the two of them of $70 million. You see what I'm saying? Like, they got a different caliber of money over here. What these folks were trying to do was try to get the clout that comes from having that Jimmy Iovine, Dr. Dre money, even though all they really got is Aunt Becky money. And so, you know, and so Dr. Dre got on there and was like, got in by himself, no jail time. And like, I feel like he was trying to flex that his little girl did it all on her own. But in reality, what he was flexing was that money he gave to school. Right now, did she have the grades to get in? It doesn't matter. She could have had the same grades as this chair that I'm sitting in and she was going to get into USC. There was no circumstance under which she was not going to get into USC. So I imagine her grades are probably good. She probably done a lot of hard work. I bet she'd be out here getting her community service on, you know, all of that. That's cool. I'm not saying she couldn't get in. I'm just saying that is an irrelevant factor in her admission. It just has nothing to do with that. And I don't know how Dre didn't think about that for a second. Right? Yeah, like, man, this ain't. He thought he was just telling a little funny joke. And then people were like, dog, you got to understand. You left Compton in 1988. You long gone from there.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of the like weird flex, but okay. Yes. It's like, dude, you don't have to flex about your daughter getting into USC. You're a billionaire. You're a billionaire. I mean, the people, like you said, the people who didn't get caught up in the college admission scandal are the people given like 10, 20 million to have a building named after them at Yale or Harvard or what have you.
Now, I'll say this too, Dre. You got all that money and all that access. Your little girl better be able to get into USC. Otherwise, that'd be a startling indictment of your genes. Ain't no excuses. Like, yeah. I'm glad. I admit, though, that, like, getting into college is cool, right? Like, I'm one of those that I'm like, I'm happy for you because you happy. But, like, holler at me when you finish. College? I don't care where you got in. Holler at me when you get finished.
Oh, boy.
You make that sound, I feel like, harsher than it is.
I'm totally with you because when you get into college or when you get a job or, you know, when you have a baby or when you get married, these are all like flex situations, right? Yes. Where you only have so many of them in your life. And when they happen to you, you want to shout it from the mountaintop. And in this case and time, that flex is on social media. Right?
Yes.
So like when I got into college, I was like, yeah, it's great. You know, super, super stoked. But then you have to like put the shoe on the other foot and realize that there are so many people out there in the world that are not happy for you.
Well,
right?
Yes, there's that. But then there's the other thing. And you know what that is? Getting into college ain't that hard. It ain't that easy necessarily, but it ain't that hard. Like getting in. No. Like, I get being proud of your kids. I really, really do. Be happy for them because they are happy. But I remember I went to my homeboy's cousins. My homeboy's got these twin cousins. And I was with their dad at their high school graduation. He was like, man, this is high school. College, yeah. I get excited about that when you're supposed to graduate from high school. And so there are a lot of people, though, and I get this. I want to be clear. Like, you know, first in their family to go to college. You know, there's people that overcome some odds to go to college. And so for those people, I'm absolutely like, hey, you did that. You know, like, I know that it wasn't easy for you to pull that off. Like, you did that. But if your people got money, I am not impressed that you got into a college.
I follow UCLA on Twitter just for general like news, and I'll see them kind of when it's springtime, and it's right around this time, you know, because we're talking about this story right now, but they're tweeting out all these videos and stuff of recent acceptees, people being like, you know, finding out that they got in and they're doing a little happy dance and stuff like that. And when I see those videos, I'm just like, scroll, 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 scroll. Does that make me salty? I mean,
like I say, be happy. If that's like I say, be happy that you got in. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, I feel like I may have been too harsh and I'm coming around and then I'm going to wind up going back to being harsh again. I am again just saying, though, that if you're Dr. Dre's daughter, I hope you would get into USC. And if you didn't get into USC, it is not your fault, ma'am. In all likelihood, it is probably Dr. Dre's fault. But this is in line with what you should be doing. Wow, I feel like I'm a hater. And you're a hater, too, because you'd be scrolling past the kids. But still, I'm just saying. You know, I don't know what I'm saying anymore. Let's just stop. All right, we'll be back to talk about the inventor in a minute. But first, the average rate on credit card debt is over 18% APR. Have you looked at your interest rate lately? Refinance your high interest credit card balances and save with a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream. Get a rate as low as 6.14 APR with AutoPay. The rate's fixed. It'll never go up. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 and there are no fees. Even get your money as soon as the day you apply. When you have good credit, you deserve great service and a low interest fixed rate loan from LightStream. That's lending uncomplicated. Want to save even more? My listeners get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount, though, is to go to lightstream.com/Bomani. LightStream.com/Bomani. Subject to credit approval. Rate includes a 0.50 auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Bomani for more information.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. So it's been a week. We talked about a little bit about the inventor on HBO and the Elizabeth Holmes scam story. Given a week, you know, your required reading, so to speak, your homework.
It wasn't required, by the way. I did it because I felt like it.
Well, your thoughts.
Okay. So I heard you talking about it, you know, on the podcast, and I went and just decided to go ahead and watch it. And I appreciate it, Gabe. And by the way, spoiler alert, you know, but I appreciate it, Gabe, that you didn't tell me about her voice.
Yeah, I mean, I figured I would let you observe and then kind of decide for yourself.
Now, I'm hearing from credible people that the voice is fake.
Yes. That is correct, and as was outlined very well on the podcast, The Dropout, Rebecca Jarvis and the good folks over at ABC. So that's also something that people should check out.
I watched it, and I believe in hearing your description of the podcast last week. I said the same thing that I feel like I'm going to say right now. Gabe, you're a very bright man. Like, you really are, and you do a great job with this podcast. You are a learned man. You know about a lot of different things, all of this. And I find you to be an honest man. And I'm just here to tell you, buddy, apparently this honesty is selling yourself short. You need to get out here and start telling some of these lies. You need to get out here and cook up the biggest lie you can and then go to Silicon Valley. Because apparently that's all you got to have is a lie and a dream. That's it. Because the part that gets me about all of this is, and this is where I look at it like, is this really what it is to be white? People just be taking your word for stuff. Not once did she have to demonstrate that her product worked. That there actually was something under the hood of the machine that she was claiming to sell. She raised $900 million for this company without once having to show and prove. Is it really that easy? Like, Gabe, do you never have anybody question the things that you say? Because I feel like people be questioning me all the time. And that's for free. Did I miss something here? Like, yo, I got this magic box. It can test all the blood. How's it work? It does. Or at least it will. Anyway, What you got? And she got 900 million. She had George Shultz, former Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger, former Secretary of State, Sam Nunn, former senator from the state of Georgia. She had all those dudes on her board. By the way, those three guys, absolutely starters on the political intramural, still in the league all-stars. I was shocked to find out all three of them were living. And so I'm shocked to find out that they're living. She found out how to get them to attach themselves to what she is doing with this operation. What? You ain't even have to show and prove one time. Now, I do feel like, Gabe, you said you read more about this stuff.
Immediately after watching the documentary, I was just kind of like doing my own research, you know, looking in to see what else I could dig up about it. And then I noticed that in the top charts, they had that podcast, The Dropout, from ABC, which is our company, right? So then I listened to that. It's like 7 episodes, basically rehashing some of the stuff that's in the documentary, but there's also a lot of information there that you don't know. So then it just kind of like opened up my eyes even more. And then there's a book out there about it. So yeah. Now I'm contemplating reading that.
But dog, do they explain how it is that she got all these powerful old men on her board? Cause that's the story I want to hear.
Well, so it's kind of a domino effect, right? Where you get one and then that kind of like patient zero guy was Shultz. Right?
Oh,
so
yeah, because his grandson was working with the program, right?
Well, so the grandson was working with the program after Shultz had already met her. Yes. So Shultz had met her. They had kind of like forged a little mentorship, bond, relationship, business relationship. And then from their relationship, he was able to basically get her an audience with all of these different guys. And she just was such a good saleswoman that she was able to schmooze.
But see, I didn't feel like it was adequately captured to me what made her such a good salesperson. Like, I did not see this visionary con artist that these other people saw. I didn't ever find her to be that impressive. That's why I'm out here asking if it's that easy to be white, because there was nothing noteworthy about her at all. Like, she just seemed like a person, just somebody who was just like, yo, I got this idea, and wrote it to 900 million. Listen. George Shultz's grandson was working on that thing, and he was like, yeah, nah, this is, you know, he realized that this was some nonsense. She hired these lawyers, who, by the way, are Nike's lawyers in the Avenatti thing. She hired these lawyers. The lawyers came and roughed the grandson up. And how do I know they roughed him up? Because there was a deposition where George Shultz is talking about his grandson getting roughed up by some goons, and he's still out here riding for Elizabeth. What?
Yeah, I find this fascinating, but it shouldn't be so fascinating on its face.
Well, what part, right? Do you find fascinating?
I was mesmerized as to like, wow, how could she really get away with this? But to your point, being as a white male, being aware of my own privilege, it's not that surprising. All she had to do was be like a good talker, be someone that's smart, be someone that has an idea, and then being able to sell it. I mean, so much of success in life for these folks is being a good salesman or saleswoman.
I am fascinated by this just because I'm fascinated by how stupid everybody else was. Like, I just can't. Whenever I see something like this, I'm like, see, I'll just be taking people's word for it. That's the part that got me all of that. It's like, wow, all of this and all it took was for you to get people to take your word for it. Not once did anybody require that you show and prove. Wow. And now you see she broke up with her boyfriend who was working there, and then she fired him, and now they both going to jail. Imagine being him explaining this to your family.
Yeah, there's like a serious age gap there,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting. And the fact that they denied the relationship from the very beginning, yet clearly all the people who worked there were totally aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought this was fascinating. I thought the listeners would be interested in it as well. So I put out asking for people's thoughts on it. So our first one is here from Kenan in St. Louis.
This is Tenet in St. Louis. The Theranos documentary is crazy for three reasons. One, it's amazing how she got so far with her idea without having any peer-reviewed papers or anything documenting the technology. I'm a physician, so my friends and I kind of thought that was kind of weird. Nothing ever in peer review. Second thing is there was never any physician or any scientist on her board of directors until like 2 years ago. Crazy. And then the third thing is like her original board of directors was a who's who of consummate white military men. To me, like they were just afraid of missing out on something big and probably, you know, enamored by her ideas and her con.
Yeah, yeah, we're kind of there. Who we got next?
All right, next one, this guy didn't give his name, but he had a good point.
I've been like mesmerized by this whole thing for a while. It's just one of the craziest stories I had seen and read. You know, it's just so funny that a 19-year-old, you know, white girl can drop out of Stanford and go out and get hundreds of millions of dollars and people call her an entrepreneur. And if a kid drops out of college to go pursue something with an actual talent, you know, they're treated as somebody who's ungrateful for the opportunity that they were given. It shows the hypocrisy of America. It just shows the fact that if you walk in and you believe it and you say it loud enough, people will get behind you if you have a certain quality about you. You and I couldn't do it. Most people we know couldn't do it. You know, and I've seen other people mention that her femininity was a big part of it. Yeah, it's only a certain kind of femininity that can pull off that that kind of scam, and it ain't black or brown femininity. So I just thought it was just a strange, crazy thing, a lot like the Firefest documentaries and a lot like the Ponzi schemes and all these other things. People who normally know better choose not to for whatever reasons because money.
So she can't come out with a new company for 10 years.
That's all?
There's a trial that's going to happen and all that sort of stuff. She took a settlement where she had to pay a fine and she wasn't allowed to be a COO for 10 years. But then there's the more serious like fraud charges that are coming as a part of like a new trial.
I'll watch the trial. I'm in. I'm down.
All right. This last one is from Ian.
Hey, yo, what's good? It's your boy Ian from the Boogie Down. Thanks about the inventor. Old girl's voice isn't hers. Dig some digging in the crates. Down that former employee's drop dime on shorty and put us on game that when she drank, her real voice came out. Crazy, right? She said she didn't care about fashion, yet she dyed her hair. She made an effort to be fashionable while failing miserably. That joint was straight trash. I guess folks didn't climb her because she was worth $7 billion. Clearly, she ain't never heard of Black Twitter. Said she ain't had time to date. But she was old boy, you know, that CEO for eons. Even lied about living in the townhouse. They lived in a dope mansion on the company's dime. She's able to raise millions without having a furnace, a working prototype, or even a Crayola drawing of a working design. Yet found that there have to be people of color who struggle to raise a dime from their grandmothers, representing viable, potentially world-changing tech. Man, privilege is trash. Good looking out.
I guarantee you that dude raps. He made great points, just to be clear. Just to be clear. But he has slapped a mixtape in a stranger's hand before.
Gosh. The part of it that is really sad, there are many parts of it that are really sad, but the part of it that is really sad is for Elizabeth, she felt compelled and she felt that she had to, in order to win over these investors, in order to win over people in general, had to augment her voice and become like Steve Jobs.
Of course she had to do that because she had no machine. What else was she supposed to do? Yeah, she felt like she had to do that because she ain't had no machine. She should have done, I say she should have done more. Apparently not. She got billion.
Yeah, but for the tech community at large, which is dominated heavily by men, and there aren't many female CEOs in the tech industry, there are a lot of women that are out there rooting for her success, right?
Yeah, I totally believe that. And one of them should have asked the question, does this thing work? Here's what I wonder about the women in tech. Remember how we talked about with Jesse? Who, by the way, did you see this? Charges were dropped.
I did see that.
And the record was sealed. I have no idea what's going on. But with Jesse, I told you there was like an underground network of black people who did not want to say out loud that they didn't believe his story, but they, you know, did it amongst themselves because you didn't want to be the one saying this in front of people. There had to be an underground network of women in tech who are like, nah, this don't smell right.
Yeah. Can I see the receipts on this?
Yeah. Not even deep questions. Just like, You know, does it work? Can I see? Can I see? That's the only question you had to ask. Look, man, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our contributors for If You Haven't Heard. Thanks to Fez Siddiqui of The Washington Post. Check out his story on Lyft's IPO. Also, thanks to Shannon Van Zandt of NPR. Check out her story on MySpace, losing all that uploaded music. And thanks to Elizabeth Holmes, because, wow, now I'm just flummoxed again. Also, thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to Harry's, thanks to Hims, and also thanks to Lightstream. Also, be sure to check out the Mina Kimes show this week, where Mina will interview Pat McAfee. Her dog Lenny co-hosts the podcast. He asks questions. Not for real, he does. It's clever. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Check us out on ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear. More driven.